Welcome. I am William Evans, and you are listening to a Living World Conversation. Our guest today is Bob Atkinson, an internationally recognized authority in life story interviewing, personal myth-making, and soul-making. He's Professor Emeritus at the University of Southern Maine and the Director of the Story Commons. Welcome, Bob. Thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you, Will. Great to be with you.
In order to fulfill our purpose, we need to get beyond the identity our society thrusts upon us, which prevents us from being who we are at full power.
Yeah, that's a great place to start, because that's really what our life journey is really all about, is remembering who we are and where we came from. There's an interesting story about that, different versions of this story found in many traditions, but it's usually known as the angel and the unborn soul. And what that story is saying is that when we're in the womb, we are visited by an angel who takes us from the womb and takes us on a journey to the world we'll be going to and gives us a preview of what our life will be like in that world. And then we're brought back to the womb, and however many weeks or months later, we come into that world forgetting what we knew as an unborn soul. And our life then is about remembering who we are, where we came from, and what our life is meant to be. That's just one way of thinking about that, because when you do think about that, the answer to what you started off with is, I think, really comes back to us as souls. That is our primary identity, not whether we're whatever other physical or cultural or any other kind of identity that we can think of. Those are all temporary identities. Our only eternal identity is as a soul. So if we can get back to that remembrance and if we do, that is a giant step toward us not only remembering where we came from, but also helping us remember what our life was meant to be in this world that we've come into. So that's really, for me, I mean, I personally found a lot of significance in that traditional story, because I think that's what it really comes down to, is all these other things that we spend so much time on, you know, whether we think we're looking good today or whatever else it might be, that's all so temporary. What is the only thing that's changeless in our lives is our soul and the potential that our soul provides us with, and also the access that it provides us with in terms of knowledge and wisdom and understanding the ageless wisdom of all the traditions. That comes from, I mean, if we don't happen to read something like that in a book or on the internet these days, we can connect through our soul in that way to the ageless verities. And when we do that, then that gives us what we need to know about how to live our lives, and also I mean, that becomes apparent because what that's telling us at the same time is that we are all connected as human beings. We all have, I mean, if I have a soul, you have a soul, and everybody else in the human family has the same soul that connects us all to the same source. And once we recognize that, the whole concept of war and even other so many other things that are so prevalent today, like racism and prejudice and economic inequity, all those things don't make any sense anymore when we come to the realization that we're all one human family, right, connected by the same soul.
Right. So it can be very tough out there right now in our world. What suggestions do you have for traveling through this time with our soul?
Yeah, that's a really big, important question. I think for me, it has to do with perspective. And I really am most comfortable with a big picture perspective, what some might think of as a systems view of things. When we can keep our focus on the whole, we don't get as confused or anything else really by the things that are going on in the world around us. So for me, it's the main thing is keeping our focus on the greater whole, so that we can achieve the greater goal. And that's but that's not necessarily easy to do either. One of the things that is in the story of our time and also in A New Story of Wholeness is the principle. I look at various principles and in those two books, and I put them together as a meta principle. And what it comes down to for me is putting them together is that consciousness evolves toward wholeness and unity. And that for me is the big picture sense of what evolution is about and where evolution is headed. Even though we're in the midst of a really difficult, chaotic, divided time, this is a fleeting moment, really. I don't mean that flippantly either. It can easily feel like a moment that's going on forever, too. But as long as we're able to keep our focus on that greater whole, if we understand the purpose and direction of evolution as leading us toward wholeness and unity, then we can be a little more, that can help us practice two very essential virtues that I feel are essential in this time. One is detachment from a lot of what is happening in the world. And, you know, so if we can detach ourselves from what feels like in the moment is pulling at us, demanding our attention, we can see beyond that moment to where it's a part of a process that's leading to something else, and that goes back to the innate pattern that I was talking about earlier that's within us that we experience personally, and that we're also experiencing collectively, that a pattern of call to wholeness, path of purification, and return to wholeness. Right now, we're clearly in the midst of the purification process. But what happens is we tend to lose sight of the purpose for that and where that's leading us. If we can remember that the purification process exists to lead us toward a return to wholeness, to our inherent unity within ourselves and in relationship to all others, including the cosmos, the universe, then remembering all of that really helps us to remain detached from a lot of what is happening, even though at the same time, detachment does not mean sitting on a mountaintop and being in retreat from the world. That doesn't mean that at all. This is a time where social action is required, is necessary in order to complete the process that we know is well underway, and to complete it in the way that we want it to be completed, and have faith that it will be, that it will result in the realization of our inherent wholeness and unity, as whenever that whole process that's involved, however long that takes us, that's what the result will be. So so the other virtue that's involved here, at the same time with detachment, the other virtue is patience. But again, patience doesn't mean sitting back and doing nothing. There's a different kind of patience that can include social action, or even better, love in action. And that's how we can decide to carry out our lives in our everyday, in our everyday lives, is to be in the world as love in action. And that is really the only thing that will hasten the process of the transformation that we're undergoing globally. So there's great hope there to be had with a certain perspective of the big picture, and remembering where evolution is guiding us toward. There's a greater purpose to it all.
Right. This is KDNK, and you're listening to A Living World Conversation with Bob Atkinson about the challenge of the time we live in. You have said to me, Bob, that the soul has an innate capacity for living in the world today. Do you have a story about your soul, or a story you know about of someone's soul who had what it took in this time?
Well, I do think of one story. I'm not sure if this is exactly what you're thinking of with your question, but I'll just offer this and then see where we might go with it. But the thing about one of the things I get from your question is that it can take us each a long time to get in touch with or to be fully connected with our soul, even though I believe our soul is with us, well, maybe even before birth and into this world. So the story that I would like to share is about my own birth, really. And the thing about that is it took me a while, well into my adult life, to realize that my entire life has been a subtle quest to find an elusive peace. I didn't remember the story that my mother had told me about my birth until there was a time in my own life experience that could explain it to me. So the story that she related to me when I was quite young was her story of being in the hospital, giving birth. She said, "The streets were filled with parades of celebration the day you were born." And of course, I had to now have to add to that, not for me, of course, but it happened to be for those parades of celebration, happened to be for the first atomic bomb that turned the world at war into a nuclear village.
Wow.
And so I was born the day of Hiroshima.
Oh.
And I didn't realize how much of an impact that was going to have and has had on my life until quite recently. You know, and that's why inner and outer peace has become such a central but hidden thread in my life. I mean, I came into this world at a moment of such great promise. Celebrations unite people around a common vision and all that. But at the same time, the reason for that celebration caused so many others so much pain and loss, obviously, as never experienced before. So my life has always been deeply linked with Hiroshima. And I think what I've also come to realize is that my soul was aware of that when I was born, the day
sure.
I was born, but I didn't become aware of it until many, many years later.
Right.
But there was a point where I became consciously aware that I was deeply linked with Hiroshima. And so in 2002, on an around-the-world semester sea voyage, where I was a faculty with 600 other students on this semester sea ship, I came full circle when we visited that sacred spot in Hiroshima, and I shared a moving moment of connection with our tour guide, whose family had survived the fateful day that I was born. It gradually became something, a process where my conscious knowledge became what my soul knew all the time throughout my whole life. And then in 2019, I decided it was time to do something a little more direct about that, and I founded One Planet Peace Forum, which is an annual event held. The intent was for it to be held at a historic conference center here in Maine, but that was when COVID started. So the first 3 years of that were online, and then last year we had the first in-person gathering at the conference center called Green Acre in Elliott, Maine, which happens to be the site where one of the founders of that, the hotel, the inn for that conference center, Sarah Farmer, was the first person to raise the first known peace flag in 1894.
Wow.
So it's a very meaningful place to have that annual One Planet Peace Forum there. You know, it took me a lifetime, really, to have that hidden thread in my life come to the surface in a big way. And now my book that'll be out next year is all about peace building too.
Wow. Well, that's a powerful story.
Huh.
Yes. It's an especially powerful story because of the timing.
Monday, that's the day that I was born, with the time difference between New York and Japan, I was born here on the 5th, which was already the 6th in Japan. And so that'll be exactly the day that I was talking about so many years ago. The air date is pretty significant. Well, it's 79 for me and Hiroshima. Next year will be 80.
Yeah. I have one, and it's a story that was also from World War II. It was told to me by Fred Donaldson, who learned to play from children who were still connected with their souls. He named his teaching Original Play. And he taught in Europe quite a bit. And a woman came to a workshop in Poland with Fred. And then she came back a few months later and said, I need to tell you a story about my grandfather. And her grandfather was a little boy in Poland during the German occupation. And one night there was a loud knock on the door, and a Nazi officer stomped in and said to the family, you have 5 minutes, pack one suitcase. And everyone in the house just stumbled about. And a little boy, this woman's grandfather, walked confidently out of a bedroom and into the living room, stepped up on the Nazi officer's black shiny boots, and wrapped his arms around the officer's legs. The officer waved his men out of the house and said, this little boy saved your life. I have a little boy like him at home. And he walked out.
Wow. Pretty amazing what a young boy can do in a time like that.
Well, a friend observed to me that it's a wonderful example of a man's actions being affected by someone's authentic identity.
Yeah.
And
right.
that little boy lived in his soul. And yeah. the soldier's soul woke upon being touched by the child. And the ice in his heart melted.
Yeah. Wow. If that story could be replicated hundreds, millions, billions of times around the world, we'd have a different world that we'd be living in.
Well, I have a version of it in a book I wrote, and it's relevant because I would use the word source to explain where we're all from and where our water comes from and our life and the energy of light and the sun come from. And so we're at risk of being disconnected from source, but we can also return in a flash. In a moment's change, we can remember we have a relationship with source.
Right. Yeah. That's all it takes is a moment for that remembrance.
Anything else you want to tell us, Bob?
Oh, well, let's see. This is the time for all of us to do the work that we're on this planet to do. I mean, you know, right now is the time. And in whatever way each of us can do whatever we're put here to do, let's do it, to bring us back together as a human family.
Yeah, remembering who we are and why we came.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Will. It's been great having a conversation with you.
It's been wonderful. You've been listening to A Living World Conversation with Bob Atkinson. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.